Good morning, everybody. Welcome. It's Sunday morning here in London, just a little way after 9 o'clock. And Lizzie and Justin are here for Turning Towards Life, week 100 and who knows what, because this week I've lost track. And we are here this morning by hook or by crook. When Lizzie and I came on a few minutes ago, we were, I know, Lizzie, reveling in the sometimes we have to just find a way in with very little preparation. Here we are, whatever else is going on, and we are here, and I am so glad, as I always am, to be here. So welcome to all of you who are watching us live this morning in our Facebook group, which you can find always at search for Turning Towards Life on Facebook. We're live every Sunday morning. And the many of you who watch us on YouTube, on our website, which is turningtowards.life. And then I'm feeling particularly moved this week, Lizzie, by conversations I've had with people over the last few days who listen in on our podcast, including getting a feel for something which is always a real joy for me, and in a way, always a surprise, given that for us, this is you and I having this conversation, which is finding out how much these conversations mean to people and how what a big deal they are for many of you in your lives, how supportive and nurturing and all kinds of things these turn out to be. So I'm really feeling filled with gladness that our efforts can do that in the world, and very grateful at the many of you who join us that make those efforts, in your joining us, make those efforts something other than a very wonderful and life-giving conversation between the two of us, Lizzie, but have it reach out much further.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. For those of you who enjoy the kind of the realities of Justin and I getting here by hook or by crook, I literally have thrown my clothes on and scraped my hair back and run downstairs after trying to feed Vespa, my little girl, at lightning speed, which funnily enough babies don't really enjoy. So she wasn't on the same time frame as us, so I was desperately trying to give her enough food so that my husband could be with her while we do this. And so I was just laughing at myself of the kind of, that's why we were a little bit late starting. And I love it that we just kind of carry on, even though it's kerfuffle. So anyway, it's a joy to be here, and it kind of adds another layer of joy for me that we truly are winging it in the most beautiful way, with a deep commitment at the heart of the winging it, which I love. And also just to be discussing and talking about what our source is today too feels so relevant to that. And looking at all of the, I guess, non-socialized parts of us, like the parts of us that aren't so acceptable, and being real here and allowing ourselves to be real, whatever that means, is such a gift. So I feel very glad to be bringing this source. This is from the lovely Richard Rohr, whose emails I receive on a daily basis. He has his kind of organization, along with others, is called the Center for Action and Contemplation, I think it's called, CAC. And I've signed up to their emails, and this is a passage from one of them. And if you're interested in furthering your understanding of who Richard Rohr is, he has an amazing loads of YouTube videos and ways that you can hear him speak. He's a very, very sane, warm, beautiful man. And the way he talks very much moves me whenever I hear him, and reading his words every day is a big centering support for me. And so here we are with this lovely passage from him. So here we go with our source, and thank you for being with us today on this Winging It episode of Turning Towards Life. Okay, so this is by Richard Rohr. We can name the darkness as darkness and the light as light. And this helps us learn how to live and work in the light so that the darkness does not overcome us. If we have a pie in the sky, everything is beautiful attitude, we're going to be trapped by the darkness because we don't see clearly enough to separate the wheat from the chaff. Conversely, if we can only see the darkness and forget the more foundational light, we will be destroyed by our own negativity and fanaticism, or we will naively think we are completely apart and above the darkness. Instead, we must wait and work with hope inside of the darkness, even our own.
So I'll read it too. We can name the darkness as darkness and the light as light. And this helps us learn how to live and work in the light so that the darkness does not overcome us. If we have a pie in the sky, everything is beautiful attitude, we are going to be trapped by the darkness because we don't see clearly enough to separate the wheat from the chaff. Conversely, if we can only see the darkness and forget the more foundational light, we will be destroyed by our own negativity and fanaticism. Or we will naively think we are completely apart and above the darkness. Instead, we must wait and work with hope inside of the darkness, even our own.
Thank you. The first thing that comes to me, Justin, in this moment is the power of naming things. And I think one of the big gifts of our work is finding ever deeper, more intricate ways of naming things so that it's not just like swimming in a kind of unfamiliar soup of feelings and thoughts all the time, but having a practice, having an inquiry of saying what things are so that we can be in relationship around things rather than feeling alone. And I'm making the connection between naming and relationship at the moment in this conversation, where as long as I can name something or even just try naming it, I can be in relationship to it, but also with another person about it. And that is a really different thing than just being alone and lonely with my mad thoughts and my crazy feelings and wonky perceptions of things. And so the fact that Richard Rohr's talking about naming things as themselves feels like a really lovely pointing to a big part of what it seems to me to be a way of being in the world, a way of talking about life, a way of being with other people, being with myself, that leaves me much more able to be in contact with the foundational light. Because as I name, I can hold in front of me some part of myself rather than feel like it is me, only me. It's part of me, but it's not who I am. And therefore, I can work with things because I can have them in front of me to see, because I can name them and talk about them.
There's one of what you know, Lizzie, is one of my favourite books in Ursula Le Guin's Earthsea series of books. There is a school for names. And if you want to learn about the world, you have to go for some years just to study names and to learn the actual names for things, the true names, not the not the superficial names that we give to things. And that seems, in your saying what you just said, of course, I'm remembering this wonderful part of this book, but the reason I'm saying it is to join you in this part of the conversation, which is, it seems to me that in a way our not naming falls into one of the traps that Richard Rohr talks about here, which is we can say what he calls a pie in the sky, everything will be fine attitude, which can so easily have some of us, certainly I know that this is has been a really easy way for me to go, certainly for long periods of my life, is to say everything's fine, and if I don't look, everything will be fine. And my act of not looking, well, actually, my act of not looking, all it does is it separates me. It allows me to cocoon myself in a kind of inattentiveness, which is defensive. It can have me feel safe when there aren't good grounds to feel safe, but it also has me feel distant and not at risk. And it seems to me that the act of naming well can for many of us feel risky. If I'm prepared to turn myself towards something and perceive it enough in order to name it, then two things happen. So one is I have some responsibility towards whatever it is that I'm naming, and that for many of us can be frightened. But the second thing is I have a kind of power that I didn't have before. And I was really touched by what you said, that naming brings us into relationship. And when you can name something, Lizzie, and you can point it out by having language for it, then I can join you in an inquiry about it. What is it? Can I see it? What is this, whatever it is that you're naming, light or darkness or fear or love or something else that's going on? I can for the first time join you in an inquiry about it, rather than doing what Richard Rohr says later, which is getting caught up in a sort of self-sealing negativity or fanaticism or numbness, and find that I'm not separate and we're all in this together. I think that's a big part of what our naming does, is it brings the background of the world into the foreground. Mm. And for those reasons, I think it doesn't surprise me in a way that many of us don't have disciplines of naming. In fact, we have disciplines of not naming. So we have these funny phrases in our culture along the lines of let me name the thing that's going on here, which can sound so aggressive and so imposing, but it only sounds that way because we use it in a way that stokes up our fear, rather than going that to name something together. Can we name what's here and then find out what it is? So the name doesn't make it into a particular thing. Naming something as the trouble I'm in brings it out, so we can then find out what it is, what the truth of it is.
Yeah.
The last part of my thought that came from what you were saying was that I was trying to feel into Richard Rohr's claim here that what's behind the darkness is light. He says that the light is foundational, which is a big claim, really, because you could equally well claim that what's behind everything is darkness. But it seems to me that in our very capacity to give names to things and then to bring them into relationship with one another and with ourselves, that's where we find the grounding for saying that there's light behind. Because it's when we find ourselves in relationship, turning towards what's here, that all kinds of capacity to respond gets evoked that wouldn't be there if we were just pretending that nothing was happening and no suffering was going on. And that's really good grounds for saying, when we pay attention to the dark, what we find is a possibility for taking care behind it, which to me seems like is the light that he's talking about.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like, as you say that, my connection to the light is, so I feel like the more I name, the more I share, the more I connect to what's happening and turn towards things and try and articulate as best I can inside relationship and with myself. The more I do that, the more I can see that who I am really can be with the darkness or the difficulty or whatever it is that's difficult, that's challenging, that feels sad or hard. And it feels like it's that way around rather than the darkness holds the light. Like if I tune into myself as an individual, I feel like I resonate with the light being foundational, because it feels like the darkness can come and go, but it comes and goes in the context of a light. And of course, I can't claim this as an experience for everyone, but I think all the work that I've done with myself and also with other people is that there feels like when we get through something, like if we move through an emotion and we really feel it, out the other side of the emotion is something lighter than the difficult emotion. Like the return feels like a light, like returning to a light rather than returning to a darkness or something. And I'm very aware for myself of this pie in the sky, everything is beautiful attitude. So I have to really be honest with myself about this, of whether I just think, oh, everything is foundationally light because I'm trying to be positive, or whether I truly believe it. And I feel like I've come a long way from being somebody who really was unawares, like pie in the sky person. But when I really looked, I found it was a defense mechanism, and it was a way of, like you said, staying safe and not having to confront certain things and turning away from a lot of things and having a very small set of criteria as to why I would be in relationship with another person or why I would do something. And the decisions that I made were based on a very narrow set of possibilities. And over the years, that's softened and keeps softening, so that I can see that many things are beautiful, but I can also see that many things aren't. And that has been such a supportive opening. And the bit that Richard Rohr talks about in terms of feeling like we're completely apart or above something has really been dissolving and continues to dissolve. And the more I turn towards the things I don't particularly like, as it were, the more connected I feel, which is kind of what I was trying to do in the first place anyway, was to feel connected and to feel real and to feel okay. But I was kind of barking up the wrong tree of being positive, being up, being in the pie in the sky realms. And so facing into the parts of our humanity, mine and other people's, that are not so pie in the sky, that are not so beautiful in those kind of stereotypical meanings of those words, has really been a big way of me welcoming life and life welcoming me back, rather than me losing control or all the things I would fear that would happen if I did face into the things that weren't light and positive and okay and fun or whatever. And so I really receive the gift that Richard is writing about here around the capacity for connection and not feeling apart if we encounter both the light and the dark in our lives, and that we don't turn away from either of them, because they both have their place and they're both very, very important. And they both, like embracing them both, serves to connect us way more deeply than if we were resisting one and welcoming the other only.
Yes. That very last thing that you said is feeling that was building very strongly in me as you were speaking. So I think you were speaking into this and from this as you were going, which is that until we can use names that feel truthful and which include what's here, include our experience, until I give up going, everything's fine. So this has been my pattern for very large parts of my life. Oh, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. Everything's fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. When really I'm sad or grieving or angry or confused or all kinds of things. And so the holding onto one pole of light and dark very strongly both has me out of relationship with large parts of myself, and then the second of all has me out of relationships with others. So because I can be with you and I can be going, and this is one of the things that really does happen in our friendship and relationship, Lizzie, is I could be going, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, which is untrue. And you might either sort of play along, which keeps us in an untruth, or what you're much more likely to do with me is to tell the truth, which then brings us into relationship. But it's the telling the truth that it's the bringing in what's currently been denied and turned away from. And as long as I'm holding on to that, mm-hmm. I'm far away. And as long as I also, once I'm holding on to one pole, any of us are holding on to one pole, it's very easy then to do that to other people, to go, well, I'll insist that you're fine and that you don't tell me anything that might be troubling or upsetting. Don't bring the dark to me, Lizzie, in which case you're stuck. I'm forcing you to be in one place. Or the other part that Richard Rohr draws into, or I can get fanatical, which is, well, if I'm fine, you must be not fine. You must be an example of everything that's not fine. And let me just tell you. And all of those places lead to us essentially not being in relationship with one another, at least not the kind of relationship where we meet one another and we are, we can affect one another. So it seemed to me, as we're speaking, that our willingness to name accurately what's here, whether we take it to be light or dark, whether we take it to be joyful or troubling, whether we take it to be soothing or painful, is part of the process by which we meet one another without taking up rigid positions.
Yeah.
And if we can't meet one another without taking up rigid positions, our capacity to do what Richard Rohr is pointing us into, which is to act in such a way that we can bring about circumstances within us and between us that might have us flourish, is so restrained and restricted, as well as the capacity for us to be in a deeper kind of relationship with one another. And so what I'm seeing from our conversation is that there's a connection between our willingness to name and our willingness to make ourselves available to one another.
Yeah. It's really beautiful thinking of those two things together, my willingness to make myself available and my capacity to name. I can really feel how connected those things are. And also, it just occurs to me as well that it's one of those excellent cycles that the more I name, the more connected I feel, the more connected I feel, the more I can name. But it's like the less I name, the less connected I feel, and the less I can name as well. That's also true. Yes. So in a way, it's a great description of what a practice is for me, which is, how do I create a cycle that supports me rather than diminishes me or removes me or makes me turn away? Even if the cycle I'm trying to create feels a little bit alien, I can still try and create a cycle. Like, I can still name and see if it connects me, and then experiment with how that connection affects how I can name, as a way of inquiring into a different way of being, a different way of doing things when I feel stuck or I feel the same patterns emerging. You know, how do I do something differently so that this could shift, that this could be not the same old thing again inside this relationship or inside this inquiry or whatever. And I think that's a really powerful little, excellent big cycle of sealing that would be really helpful to practice. And I'm asking myself, you know, how much more could I name things? And how could I, at the same time in the naming, observe how much more connected I feel when I do name things? So how could I talk about things more and experiment with naming what my experience is rather than just having it be mine? And see how that generates connection with myself and possibly also with other people as well. And journaling, I found over the years, has been amazing to kind of see my thoughts on a page and go, oh, that's what I think. I didn't know that. And then I connect to that and it shifts it somehow. And I know for sure having conversations where I get to feel safe and speak freely in my inquiries about things. It's like, as I name, I learn. Like, I'm teaching myself what I'm like by naming things. There's some kind of way that in the naming, I'm learning in that very moment what I'm like. And I didn't know that I was like that, or that I thought that, or that I felt that before I named it. And then the light bulb comes out, like I've kind of excavated something I didn't know about because I was allowed to inquire and I was listened to and I was given space for something to emerge that wasn't particularly conscious but might have been buried somewhere. And I think that's also the power of what you're saying, this lovely little cycle that really has a huge, huge possibility in it for shifting things so beautifully. And the other connection is that the more I'm in contact with all these different parts of myself that are maybe light, maybe dark, it allows me to be present to others when they are in the possibility of naming things, so that they can name all kinds of things in the spectrum of what it is to be human, because I can be present to whatever those things are, and I can be a space into which anything can be said, rather than just this narrow thing, like you were saying, if you can only be like this. And so I'm just feeling the reciprocal power of this as well. Like, if I have this practice for myself, it's not only for me and for my benefit, but it allows me to be with people in a different way because this is my practice.
Yes. So beautifully said. And it seems to me that our learning to give names to things is what allows us, I'm going to say to see, but that's not really the word I want to use here, but to be in contact with, maybe is another way of saying it, the richness and depth of this being human. So the bringing of good names for our experiences, for our ideas, for our feelings, for lots of other things into our shared conversation opens up wide space that wouldn't be there before. And I'm thinking a lot, we're having this conversation the week before a government election in this country, and I've been feeling and thinking into many of the kinds of darkness that it's very easy for us to get into when we won't or can't listen to people who have very different points of view, because we have such strong experiences that we won't and can't name, and we want to keep ourselves feeling a particular way. Mm-hmm. I was involved in a conversation last night across some very significant political differences where I could feel that if I'm prepared to name for myself, I feel really vulnerable having this conversation, or I can feel my own wish to be right becoming present, and I can feel my care for the and my love for the person who I'm speaking with, and I could, once we can name all of these, it's just as you're saying, Lizzie, that the practice of giving good names that's easy for us not to do, what it does is it opens up a world in which we can meet one another, not in agreement, not in right and wrong, not in any of those things, but in relationship. Mm. And I think for many of us, this practice that you're talking about of learning to name, of doing things like writing reflectively about our own experience so we can start to see what's happening, is exactly what can help give us mm-hmm. the capacity to attend to all of that, so that when we are doing something really important, like being in relationship with someone with whom we have some kind of sense of difficulty for us or for them, it's our naming that allows us to stay in, but not our aggressive naming or our trying to be right kind of naming, not that kind of naming, which I think sometimes we mean when we say, I'm going to name what's going on here, but a much more tender, vulnerable kind of naming of, here's what's happening. Mm. That's the bridge across we can walk when we're most in difficulty. Maybe that's one way of talking about what Richard Rohr says right at the end, where he says, we have to wait and work with hope inside of the darkness, even our own. means doing exactly this act that you're proposing to us.
Yeah. Well, it's really lovely. Maybe it's a great place to end, Justin, this waiting and working with hope inside of our darkness as an inquiry as to what on earth that means for each of us. And I feel very grateful and settled in this conversation. It feels like a real gift to be speaking about this naming thing, and I'm grateful for just us basically doing lots of naming. And that is one huge big walloping part of what turning towards life is that we're naming lots of things. And I think that's a big gift, and I do so grateful whenever I hear that this is meaningful to anybody and helps anybody in any way to be part of the naming. And I'm just really happy to be here and happy to be on the receiving end of what this conversation is, like everyone else is too. And I wanted to say a quick reminder that if you're listening on the 8th of December 2019, tomorrow night in Hammersmith, me and my lovely sister Holly are going to be in Recenter in Hammersmith, which is a lovely place and which will hold our little group called Turning Towards Love. And it's from 7 till 9 p.m. And you can look on recenter.co.uk to find out details if you'd like to join us. We would love to have you. It's a very small, safe, beautiful circle. And if you're already coming, we look forward to seeing you. We know that we have some lovely committed regulars that come to everyone, and it's a very beautiful place. So if you fancy joining us, please check us out. And it's been very lovely to be here. So thank you all. And Justin and I will be here next week at 9 a.m. by hook or by crook. And we will see you then for a source chosen by Justin.
We will. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye.